Hello, and welcome to this February 2014 edition of Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy, a program designed to bring you timely information on energy topics of particular interest to Cape Cod and Martha's Vineyard. I'm your host, Matt Dudley. The Cape Light Compact, an intergovernmental organization representing the 21 towns and two counties of Cape Cod and Martha's Vineyard, was formed in 1997 with a goal to serve the area's nearly 200,000 electric customers, well, 200,000 now, with comprehensive energy services, including competitive power supply, consumer advocacy, and the delivery of energy efficiency programs. In order to offer these services, the Compact had to file a municipal aggregation plan with the State Department, now known as the Department of Public Utilities, for consideration and approval. The Compact, one of the first municipal aggregators in the state and the country, has been kind of a poster child for that aggregation plan, in that now other municipal aggregators are using it to build the basis of their programs. Recently, the Department of Public Utilities has asked that the Compact go back and review its aggregation plan, just to make sure that it aligns with the current practices of the organization, which may have changed over the last 17 years or so. Today, we sit down with the Cape Light Compact's Administrator Maggie Downey, as well as the Compact's new Senior Power Supply Planner, Stefan Wallenberg, to discuss the aggregation plan, as well as some upcoming events for the Compact. Maggie, Stefan, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. It's nice to be here, Matt.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Great. So, you guys have been pretty busy lately. A lot of stuff's going on with the Cape Light Compact. We just noticed yesterday that, public comment period for the Compact's revisions to the aggregation plan recently closed, being that this is early February. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the aggregation plan and what the Compact's been tasked with?
Oh, certainly. The Cape Light Compact, as you know, is a municipal aggregator under Massachusetts general laws, and we have three primary functions as a municipal aggregator. The first is to aggregate consumers for the purchase and negotiate terms and conditions to purchase electricity. And again, that's we provide customers on the Cape and Vineyard a choice and their electric supplier. And the second, and actually the biggest part of our responsibilities is locally administering the energy efficiency programs on the Cape and Vineyard instead of the distribution company. And then the third is consumer advocacy. So all of those things are tied together and were defined through what's known as our aggregation plan. By statute, in order to become a municipal aggregator, going way back to the late 1990s, we had to prepare a plan, a document, working with Department of Energy Resources, and the plan is called an aggregation plan, and that had to be submitted to the Department of Public Utilities for review and approval. And once they approved that document, you were then authorized to move forward and begin implementing those three things that I just described. And the Compact went through that process back, and we received approval back in 2000. So there's a lot of water under the bridge since we had that plan, since it was drafted by the Compact Governing Board and since it was approved by the state. So, and Stefan, I don't know if you want to pipe in here. Most recently, back in August of 2013, we were contacted by the Department of Public Utilities because they were in the process of referring to our aggregation plan as they reviewed other cities and towns who were becoming aggregators and noticed that we had our plan contained obsolete terms and references, as well as some of the things we were doing now were not consistent with what we thought we would be doing over 15 years ago. So they asked us to consider revising that plan. And Stefan, if you want to jump in and talk about the process after we received a letter from them in August about what the Compact Board did.
Sure. So basically the Compact Board, you know, they went back and they considered what the DPU asked us to take a look at, and they found that there were a couple places where we could update this plan that we'd originally thought of as kind of a static document that wouldn't need to be updated. So we did a lot of things, like we took out, you know, specific references to people that are no longer with the Compact. We we updated things to change them to reflect those changes that have happened since, you know, 15 years ago when they originally wrote the plan. And there have been a good number of those changes. And then finally, the DPU also was the Department of Public Utilities, which regulates all of these municipal aggregations, basically took an opportunity to come out with this ruling that affected a lot of different components of municipal aggregations. And that wasn't out when they originally asked us to do this revision. So when it did come out, we took a look at that and made sure that our plan was consistent with all of the things that they'd included in that ruling.
So as a little bit of background, so the compact files this aggregation plan in the early 2000s. In 2000 was when it was approved. It was probably drafted a few years before that, right?
Yep.
So as with anything, plans change, right?
Yes.
And so this plan was filed, and now other municipalities want to become like the Cape Light Compact. They want to join the show and do power supply and energy efficiency and things like that. So the DPU, in looking at our aggregation plan, that's where you're saying they saw some obsolete references, some companies that don't exist anymore, or compact board members that have since gone on to enjoy their retirement. So, Stefan, you were mentioning they were reviewing a plan, and I believe it's called the Lowell Aggregation Plan, right?
Right.
That was part of this?
Exactly. So like you said, what really started all of this was because there are so many other towns in Massachusetts that were coming forward and that wanted to do municipal aggregations, kind of the way that the Cape Light Compact does it, but not exactly the same way. They were coming forward. And the DPU actually, when they're looking at these new plans, they were comparing it to our plan. And so they were spending so much time looking at these plans and kind of comparing it to what the Cape Light Compact had submitted a long time ago, that in going through it in detail, they started to realize that there were some things that we could update. And there were some things that we could update.
And one of the, it isn't just about obsolete references. We changed our procurement process from what we thought we were going to do back in the late 90s. We've updated the procurement process language in the plan specifically to identify that we now have a chief procurement officer who oversees the negotiations of the terms and conditions. And we also included language in the aggregation plan. We beefed up the language and changed it about the operational adder that we collect, which is a tenth of a cent that's included in the power supply price that covers the cost of operations. So we put in some specific parameters. When I say we, the Cape Light Compact Governing Board, put in some parameters around those funds, what they can be used for, how much can be collected. Again, in response to comments that we've heard from the Assembly of Delegates and from the community about improving and increasing transparency about the revenues that the compact administers.
Yeah, so some of those revenues which have come through that adder in the past have kind of been what is spark some criticism of the compact, right? Where use of those is where people may or may not agree with what the compact's mission.
Right. Specifically, I think you're referring to the compact's governing board funding of the Cape and Vineyard, start establishing and funding the Cape and Vineyard Electric Cooperative.
Yep.
And so we, and the Barnstable County Assembly of Delegates review of the Cape Light Compact. And as the compact board took very seriously those comments and recommendations made by the assembly. And in fact, as soon as that report was finished and completed in June of 2012, the board immediately engaged the Assembly of Delegates in Barnstable County's auditing firm to adopt one of the recommendations, which was that we have independent financial statements prepared. Remember, the compact has always been included in the Barnstable County annual audit. So an auditor has always looked at our funds, but we've never had independent financial statements. And that means an income statement and a balance sheet separate from the county. And the board took that recommendation very seriously, took it to heart, engaged the auditor, and implemented the recommendations of the county's auditor on how to improve and organize the compact's financial reports, and that we included in the aggregation plan. So that's the linkage and the nexus. We took a recommendation, the board took a recommendation by the assembly, adopted it, and then incorporated that into our aggregation plan on having independent financial reports prepared. We'll still be in the county's audits every year, so
right.
We'll be audited twice. We'll be audited as a part of the county, and then we'll be audited independently in addition to all of the regulatory review that the funds go on at the state level.
Yeah, that's an important thing to notice, that the compact's funds are reviewed several times by different organizations. With Barnstable County, it's good that the compact is looking at it themselves too, because it is a pretty complex financial situation that the compact is in, especially when being looped into a larger organization like Barnstable County. So that transparency is definitely going to be appreciated by the members of the public. That's for certain. So part of the recommendations from the Assembly of Delegates was to review past years, correct? And instead of, the recommendation wasn't just to move forward doing financial audits, it was to
correct. One of the recommendations was to go back in time and complete independent audited financial statements, and when which the board had every intention of doing, but it was actually the recommendation of the county's auditor that due to the amount of time that has lapsed and documents, you know, under public records law no longer exist, that they're the value in preparing them, they recommended not doing independent financial statements from anything beyond prior to 2009. So 2003, 4, 5, 6, and 7, and 8, they did agreed upon procedures where they sampled the expenditures to assure that the expenditures, that funds were spent on what they were supposed to be spent on, which is what they did. They actually looked at the energy efficiency fund, and they looked at the operational ladder expenditures and put together a report on that. So again, this wasn't the compact making that decision. We were following the advice of an independently hired and approved by the Assembly, their very own auditors.
It was quite reputable, yeah.
Right. I mean, it wasn't as if we just decided to do this on our own. There was a process, and the board agreed to follow the advice and guidance of an auditor. So we have agreed upon procedures for the period of 2003 through 2008, and then we have independent financial statements from 2009, 10, 11. They're working on 12, and the board will be doing that every year going forward.
And the reports from those activities are on the Cape Light Compact's website, correct?
Yes.
At www.capelightcompact.org, and it's probably under reports, financial reports.
Yes, they're under reports, financial reports. You can see the agreed upon procedures. You can see the audits. And, you know, in addition to that, every, again, listening to some of the comments and concerns we heard from the public, the board posts its board meeting packets on our website, and you can actually follow month by month all of the expenditures of the Cape Light Compact. And you know, that being said, that's pretty unique. There aren't many public entities on the Cape and Vineyard that on their website you can see what's happening month to month, and you can see where the expenditures are coming and what's happening. So again, listen, it's a lot of, we have a lot of public funds, ratepayer funds, especially on the energy efficiency program. So all of that information is now up on our website, and you can follow it if you have an interest.
And also go to the board meetings where they're explained a little bit more in depth for
yes.
for the layperson. So if we go back to the aggregation plan, we were talking about the Lowell order, and you know, earlier we were talking about this mill adder. And the Cape Light Compact is unique in that we're a public entity, right? Where that mill adder is collected and then dispersed for projects like the like funding of CVAC, where with other aggregations, they if they don't have internal staff, is the mill adder being collected and paid out as a fee, or what's the deal with that?
So this was actually kind of what started the Department of Public Utilities taking a closer look at some of the new aggregation plans that some of the municipalities were sending into them. And it's exactly what you said. Basically, the concern was that other municipalities that are looking to do aggregations, unlike the Cape Light Compact, hire a broker in almost every case. And that broker is responsible for basically implementing their power supply program, a program which is comparable to what the Compact does. But again, the Compact doesn't have a broker. And so that entire mill in all of those cases was going to pay that broker. And so there was some question about whether that was an appropriate use of funds, exactly how much the broker should be paid, you know, whether or not the state had a right to regulate that. There were a lot of questions around that. And that's kind of what drove this whole thing.
So the order off of that really isn't really pertinent to the Compact in that we don't pay those brokerage fees on some of that?
They took the opportunity to address a couple of lingering questions about municipal aggregations. So that was one of them. And in that case, the Department of Public Utilities found that it was absolutely fine for aggregations to use that mill to pay a broker. Basically, what they said about these operational adders in general is that it's really up to the aggregation and the municipality what they would like to use those funds for. There are any number of different things that might be an appropriate way to spend those funds. So for the Compact, that means running the power supply program. It means doing a lot of great consumer advocacy. And it, you know, in the past, it's meant founding and funding CVAC.
And how the Cape Light Compact Board appropriates that fund is important. It's done through an annual budgeting process. We have an So the compact has two primary budgets. It has its energy efficiency budget, which runs on a calendar year, and that is a fully adjudicated budget that's approved by the Department of Public Utilities with input from the Attorney General's Office, the Division of Energy Resources. We report annually on the expenditure of all of those funds. Mm-hmm. So, and that budget is put together on a three-year plan. So we have a three-year energy efficiency budget that's been approved by the state, and annually on a fiscal year, July 1 to June 30th, the Compact Governing Board approves its operating budget. So all of the things that Stefan just referenced are approved through the operating budget. So staff salaries, supplies, that's in our operating budget, and that's the type of information that you can track monthly on our website.
And that's all brought before the board, which consists of a member of every single town of
Correct.
You know, the compact, and that's good. So that's all reviewed, and if you know. You can always provide feedback to your local representative as well, right? I'm sure that they welcome it. So that's good. The budgets of the Cape Light Compact have often been subject to question because they're hard to track, especially the difference between energy efficiency and then the reserve funds and power supply stuff. So that's good, and it's definitely helpful for the transparency that the compact has proven on the website. And again, if you have questions, you can shoot us an email. Or give us a call, and hopefully we can answer any questions for our listeners, not for you two. Obviously, you know a lot of this. So, with the aggregation plan, what's the next step? So, you know, our public comment period is coming to a completion.
So next, it's up to the Department of Public Utilities to basically take a look at the revisions that we've proposed, and there are a couple of slightly different processes that we can take. So we don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but they'll review it, and ultimately it will be up to them to approve it.
And prior to it going to the DPU at the March Cape Light Compact Governing Board meeting, the board will be making its final, if not in March, it'll be in a later meeting, but hopefully in March, they'll doing a final action on the plan before they send it to the Department of Public Utilities. So all the comments that we collected, so comment period was a 7-week public comment period mid-December, ran through January 31st. Mm-hmm. Three informational sessions were held on the aggregation plan, proposed revisions. There was one in Mashpee, one in Orleans, and one on the Vineyard. So we had a 7 to 8 week public comment period, three informational sessions. The board then, staff, which is what staff does, will then respond if needed to some of the comments we've received. And the board may bring back some more additional changes at their March meeting, but the goal will be for the board to finalize the proposed revisions to the plan. And then, as Stefan mentioned, the next step would be the regulatory process, which is to submit the entire document with all the comments received to the Department of Public Utilities for final approval.
So it's reapproval of an approved plan as amended?
They'll be revised. They'll be approving the revised aggregation plan. And, it's important just to, I don't want to get too technical, but it's important to note that, as you stated earlier, the intent of the aggregation plan was to be a static document. It wasn't something that we thought we would be revising. And in fact, we stated back in 1998-99 that we would be using our intergovernmental agreement, which is a document on our website, for our day-to-day operations, because that can be changed more quickly. It's a local document governed by the member towns and counties. That's the document that you have. So you have to look at things together to look at how we govern ourselves as they govern themselves as a board.
So even in the aggregation plan, if things do change, it's incorporated into that intergovernmental agreement, which is between all the towns and then the members.
Correct.
And that's on the website as well, if anybody wants to take a look at that. So is the DPU said that they want the aggregation plan to be revised or reviewed every so often through this process, or is this kind of just a one and done, and if they ever, think that you should again?
So one of the helpful things that came from their Lowell order was they specified when they would like for us, or any other aggregation for that matter, to update their aggregation plan. So we have a much better idea of what would trigger what they think is a necessary revision of the plan. And it's things like, again, if there are obsolete terms or references, or if our if our operations have changed to the point where what we submit in the plan just doesn't describe what we actually do anymore. But now we know that that's the trigger that they're looking for, and that they'll be looking for a revised plan if any of those things happen in the future. So we know what we need to do now.
Great. You're listening to the Cape Light Compact Focus on Energy. Our guests today are Maggie Downey, the administrator for the Cape Light Compact, and Stefan Wallenberg, the organization's senior power supply planner. We're talking about the Cape Light Compact's aggregation plan, for those of you just joining us now. So, Maggie, Stefan, once this is said and done, where it's going to be filed with the, you know, with the department, maybe we go back, maybe we don't. Everything's incorporated into the intergovernmental agreement. That's good. So, what's on the horizon for the compact after this update? What have you guys been working on? What's new and exciting for the members of the compact?
Well, looking ahead to 2014, we will be going out to bid for and negotiating terms and conditions with an RFP for the power supply program. We have fixed prices set from the January meter reads to the December meter reads. So we will need to be working on having a RFP to have a new supply contract in place for the December meter reads. And we're looking for, that's a lot of work. We're looking forward to that and to see what the market will show. Right now, the market is very, very volatile due to, Stefan, I don't know if you have a better job of explaining what's driving prices right now. So we're not going out to bid in the winter months. We're going to be waiting a little longer.
That's right. So, you know, a lot of people probably, well, if they were looking at their bills, they would have noticed that in January, regardless of whether you were with the compact or NSTAR or any other supplier for that matter, your bill almost definitely went up. And the reason that happened is because of some issues that relate to natural gas. You know, just to summarize really quickly, in New England, most of our electricity is produced with natural gas. So anytime the price of natural gas fluctuates or increases, then the price of electricity is going to go up a lot too. And while you hear a lot about how we have this enormous abundance of natural gas, you know, you hear about fracking, the Marcellus Shale, and all these other things, one of the issues that we have in New England is getting all of that gas to places in other parts of the country where it's cheaper up to us. And so while we've been increasing the amount of natural gas that we use for electricity production and heating our homes, we haven't been increasing the infrastructure, the pipelines that we need to literally take the gas from where it's gotten out of the ground and refined and up to us here in New England where we're using it. So in the winter, when we're using a lot of gas both for electricity production but also for heating our homes, the prices spike a lot. And that's really one of the biggest reasons why, you know, people would have seen their bills go up in January.
And that's probably one of the reasons why the compact has got fixed price billing for a period of time, as
exactly.
opposed to just paying what the market is month to month. You may save a little bit. You may be paying a little bit more than what it's being produced for, you know, in the shoulder seasons or in the summer. But right now, I heard you talking earlier this week about things are pretty expensive out there in the energy market right now as far as electricity prices.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the past couple of weeks, you know, just to give you an idea, wholesale prices can average maybe $30 or $40 per megawatt hour. But in the past couple of weeks, we've seen the prices on that market spike to $1,000, even $1,200 a megawatt hour, which are just really outrageous prices. And to give you a sense, again, you know, if your price was, you know, just to use a round number, 10 cents, that would be $100 a megawatt hour. So we're talking about paying 10 times more on the wholesale market
right.
than what, you know, the consumer ends up paying.
So if you were on a flexible rate, there's a chance that you could get hit with a $100 per kilowatt hour or a $10 per kilowatt hour charge.
Well, you could get a charge much higher than you want. Anyway.
Yeah, that would be a surprise.
Anecdotally, because it isn't something that's germane to the Cape, you may have read in any of the Boston or national papers that some companies who are on variable rates because it better fits the nature of their business will actually scale back. Or slow down production at paper mills or plants in New England during this time of year to avoid the price spikes, and then just, you know, they can shift their work to weekends or off hours to respond to markets. Because remember, electricity markets, it's a commodities market.
Right, it's just like the stocks, right?
This is a very volatile time of the year. So that's the biggest thing on the horizon for the Cape Light Compact. And I know we'll be talking about at a future show what's happening in the world of energy efficiency, talking about some new rebates and some new changes to our energy efficiency program. And on the consumer advocacy, we just, I know this was mentioned, it's maybe old news, but just to remind people that we just successfully won a DPU decision that prevented an immediate increase of about $21 million on residential rates due to the Cape Light Compact's intervention on behalf of ratepayers in an NSTAR docket, where they were looking at how they allocate costs, and they were proposing to significantly increase costs to the residential customers. And the compact, on behalf of all of our customers, regardless of who you get your supply from, on behalf of everybody on the Cape and Vineyard, intervened in that docket to let the DPU know that we did not agree with the allocation. We had great concern with it, and we were very successful in that. So those types of DPU proceedings occur throughout the year, and the Cape Light Compact looks and considers each and every one of them very thoroughly before weighing in as to whether or not there are potential adverse impacts to our ratepayers. Anything else on that DPU side, Stefan, that's upcoming in 2014?
Well, there's a lot to pay attention to. You know, everyone's been talking about the smart grid, and so that's going to have some serious impacts for consumers in the future. You know, whether or not people will pay for higher prices during the day than they do at night, all those kinds of things. So we're going to be paying a lot of really close attention to dockets around grid modernization to make sure that we're protecting our consumers.
So as Joe Sorries used to say, the compact has got the three legs to the stool, right? And we, you know, we've got a pretty good handle on what energy efficiency is. Power supply, you guys have done really good with today. So that's the third, is the consumer advocacy, where you're sitting there at the State House, or you're sitting up there in Boston looking at these dockets and making sure that, you know, the interests of the consumer here are protected the most. So that's good. And, you know, $21 million isn't really some, you know, a number to shake a stick at either with the what it costs for residential and low-income customers, which is a pretty good portion of our base here on the Cape. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Great. So in the RFP process, when we look at, I guess not as much so the RFP, but we were talking about how different suppliers make changes as the market changes. And, you know, one of the things that has been said a number of times in the past is that why doesn't the compact just shut down operations when their price is higher than NSTAR, which, you know, comes up maybe in an ideal world. Is that something that's possible?
So this is another thing that the DPU decided to take a look at in the Lowell order, because other municipal aggregations have done just that. You know, anytime they didn't think they were going to be able to beat basic services price, they essentially temporarily shut down the aggregation, put everyone onto basic service, and then tried to take them back if they thought they could beat the price in the next period, whatever that was. And the DPU very specifically said that municipal aggregations are not allowed to do that. So if you take your customers and you shift them back to basic service, that really means that you have to close your doors. If you, you know, really wanted to have a municipal aggregation again, you could hypothetically start from scratch, but it's a really time, labor, and resource intensive process to do that. So effectively, it means that you cannot put your customers back to basic service.
And it's important that when, this is, I guess, my last comment before our time is up, that information is really critical, because the Cape Light Compact can't be looked at through a lens of only one of the things that we do. In order to run the energy efficiency program, in order to save, to return millions, hundreds of millions of dollars over the years in consumer advocacy funds, and getting up to being over $100 million in energy efficiency funds to ratepayers, you have to have the power supply program. So they're all linked collectively, and the benefits of all of those programs together, the compact, the towns, the boards of selectmen, town council, county commissioners, believe outweigh any pricing differential we may experience.
So the compact is, as a whole, it creates a lot of benefits for the area, which is what you were just saying, and that's a good thing to remember. And that, you know, our prices are, well, in the past have more frequently than not been lower than NSTAR, but when they're higher, it's hard for us to just cut out all the programs because they'd all have to go. So we're up against the clock. Maggie, Stefan, thank you for joining me. If anyone has any questions, they can hopefully find you guys on our website, shoot you an email, or give us a call.
Thank you very much, Matt. Nice to see you.
Yeah, thanks, Matt.
This has been Cape Light Compact's Focus on Energy. I'm your host, Matt Dudley. If you have questions or any topics that you'd like us to discuss in the future, give us a call at 800-797-6699 or email us at focus@capelightcompact.org. You can also visit our website at www.capelightcompact.org. I'd like to thank WOMR's Maddie Dredd for helping us get this out to you. And join us next time, same time, same place, 92.1 WOMR FM Provincetown, 91.3 WFRM FM Orleans, and live online at WOMR.org, where you can also listen to past episodes.